Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Filipino Freethinkers podcast. It's also a video. Today, we have a conversation for our cause, which is an interview with a freethinker to support the ongoing relief efforts for the Yolanda victims. And of course, we again remind you, if you haven't yet, to volunteer, to donate, and to show everyone what two hands working can do. Hello, Hemant.
Hi, Red. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving.
You too, man.
Yeah, and I just saw that video that you posted about what if someone asks you to say a Thanksgiving prayer, and it just reminded me why you are the friendly atheist. I mean, I know a lot of other people who would, in the same situation, say something like, debate with them or use that as an opportunity to start a conversation that you would otherwise not have. And you really are a friendly atheist in that way.
It could be fun to have the debate, but if you're looking to just have a calm, peaceful dinner, there are ways to do that too.
Yeah. And when you picked the name Friendly Atheist, did you feel that it was particularly important to distinguish yourself as the friendly one?
No, you know what? In retrospect, I realized that's probably how it looks. But the funny thing is, when I picked the name, I did it pretty quickly. I didn't really put a lot of thought into it. All I remember is that every time I read about atheists in the media, they kept saying angry atheist, staunch atheist, militant atheist. And it was weird because all the atheists I knew were really happy, friendly people. And so I figured, okay, let's just do something in opposition to that stereotype. And it doesn't mean that I'm so accommodating. It doesn't mean that religious people can walk all over me, which I think sometimes I've gotten that comment. You don't sound very friendly in this post. Well, sometimes we should be angry. There are good reasons for it. I'm glad I ended up going with that because I think it's a fair characterization of a lot of atheists I know.
Yeah, you spoke about how we are portrayed in the media, and recently you also wrote about something that Sarah Silverman said.
Yeah.
When she kind of threw us under the bus and said that she wasn't an atheist, although she was godless, she preferred to be called agnostic. So
she doesn't believe in God, but she's not one of those atheists. That's essentially what it came down to.
Yeah. Can you tell us a bit about why you think that happened? Why there is that stigma associated with the word atheist as opposed to, say, agnostic? Or in our
case,
a lot of people join our group because we use freethinker. So why do you think atheist is such a heavy name to carry?
Well, it's just had a loaded connotation for a very long time. People hear the word atheist and they just assume the worst. They think of people who want to stop you from practicing your own faith. Even though I don't know any atheists who are like barging into churches demanding that they be shut down. But people have this negative idea of what an atheist actually does or what that means. I think if it was just one belief system out of many, I don't think it would get as much negative. Sorry, I'm losing my train of thought here. I don't think it would have such a bad vibe if people just assumed, oh, that's one belief system and I have mine. But they get a sense, and there are reasons for it, because, historically atheists have been the rebels. We've been the ones who are filing lawsuits. But I would argue those lawsuits were in defense of religious freedom, to allow everyone to practice faith and not have the government tell you what to believe. So I understand why people don't like the word, but it doesn't mean it's not true, that it doesn't describe you. And that's unfortunate that so many people want to hide from it. And I think we ought to reclaim the word. And I think it's okay to call yourself, to define yourself by what you're not when so many people around you are not atheists. They believe in the supernatural.
Yeah. And I guess it's when you first become an atheist. I mean, you come to the realization that everything that you've been taught could be a lie or was indeed a lie. You feel that you have to go out there and somehow blame someone or do something about it at least and tell the world that, hey, you guys, you've been fooled or something like that. So in my experience, at least in our group, when you start to become a or to come out as an atheist, you start very angry, and then as you go on, as you said it over and over, you start to mellow down and you settle into a more benevolent or friendly kind of atheism or skepticism. Do you think, but then there are those who are still very angry, who never lose that fervor, who go as far as, say, burn the churches or kill the priests or stuff like that. Do you have any advice for people who are this way?
Look, I mean, I don't even think that's a small minority. We're talking about a handful of people here, and they're crazy, so forget them. Most atheists I know don't, I mean, there are two things. There are the atheists who focus on trying to get religious people to get rid of those fundamentalist aspects of their faith. If you're a Christian and you think gay people are fine and you're not getting in the way of, you know, gay people getting married in America, fine. I don't really care that you believe in God. And that's kind of where I focus. I'd rather have religious people realize, oh, there's a lot of problems with religion and I'm not going to be like those other people. And then you also have those atheists who are more interested in making sure people understand that God doesn't exist. And I think that's a worthwhile thing to be focused on. I just don't care about it that much. I don't know that that's very realistic, that everyone's just going to magically drop their faith when you, you know, use the magic words. So my focus is on getting religious people to be less religious.
In our group, our focus is on secularism, like keeping church and state separate. And that's a challenge when a lot of legislators somehow can't do their jobs without wearing their religion on their sleeves.
Yeah, and that's the case here too. And you know what? There are a lot of religious people who would be on our side when it comes to those issues. They support church-state separation. And I think we have a much better path ahead of us if we try to ally ourselves, you know, with those groups of people. Because there's a lot of them out there who fight for the same fights. They fight the same fights we do. And so we ought to bring them, you know, on our side. Don't run away from them just because they're religious.
Yeah, you're a math teacher.
Yeah.
Right. And as an advocate who promotes secularism and atheism and humanism, do you sometimes run the risk of, you know, crossing the boundary in promoting those kinds of ideologies to your students?
No. I actually take very good precautions to make sure that never happens, in the sense that even if a student asks me about anything I do online, I just kind of shut the conversation down. So, you know, I'm well aware that I have a very public persona, and I'm aware that the students are probably aware of that, but honestly, we have so much math to talk about when we're in class that it rarely comes up, and when it does, they're just more interested that they found me online, not really anything to do with what I'm saying.
Any concerned parents coming up to you and, you know, being overly sensitive about your being an atheist?
Oh, never. And you know what? Their concern is, did I teach their kids math? And I do. And so they don't really care what I do outside of school. I think even the parents are aware that whatever I do online, I do it outside of school. And they know that. So what are they going to be upset about?
As a student, you were already into this. You helped form the Students Without Religious Dogma or
so. Yeah, in college. I started a group.
And you were the chair, you became the chair of the Secular Student Alliance.
Yeah.
What particular challenges do non-believers face, particularly as students?
Well, I think the thing students have to deal with is knowing what the rules are at their school. Sometimes they want to start a group, they want to meet other atheists, and they don't necessarily know how to do it. And their administrators, the people who are supposed to be helping them, turn out to be their biggest obstacles. And not only do they have to overcome, like, the bureaucracy and hierarchy at their schools, they have to sometimes do this under the covers because their parents, they can't let their parents find out because their parents might kick them out of the house. Maybe they're not out to their friends either. So they're trying to organize. They're trying to meet other atheists. And they're doing it secretly because they're, you know, no one they know can find out necessarily. So they have it, I think high school kids have it a lot harder than even college kids do, because at least at college, you're away from your family. You do have a little more independence.
Yeah, and then, of course, when you go outside the structure of that school and you face the wider community, there are more particular challenges, that, like you mentioned, with your family, with your friends,
yeah,
with your relatives. You wrote the Young Atheist Survival Guide.
Yeah.
what do you think are the most important things that a young non-believer needs to know to not only survive, but to thrive in a world that's, especially here in our country, which is predominantly Catholic and religious and conservative?
Well, I think the biggest thing is to, if you feel comfortable going out of the closet saying you're an atheist, I think you have an obligation to do so. I think it doesn't help anybody when you stay in the closet. And if you are safe with your family, if you're in a good community where you can do that, you should do that. You should form a group for atheists, because believe me, and we have found this over and over again, when you come out, when you form a group, you are speaking for so many people who don't have that courage. And by the way, if you're not a student, also, it's totally fine. You can help them by helping them navigate through those obstacles. You know, if you're a faculty member like I am, you can be the person who helps them with the rules, helps students guide through the path of becoming an organized club. If you're a parent, you know, give your child the tools they need to ask critical questions and have that sense of independence, even if they disagree with you. And so there's so many things that, you know, students can be doing, but that the rest of us can be doing to help them out.
Yes, you've been talking more in a sense of support, or, you know, in, you know, coming out and supporting people who are already on that side of the fence. But some people aren't content with that. You know, they want to change society. They're, these people are more commonly called the new atheists or the militant atheists. Do you identify as one?
Oh, totally. I'm talking about two different roles here. I have one role as kind of a faculty member who's there to help students explore their own beliefs. And I take that role very seriously. I'm not, you know, at school, even after school, when the kids have an atheist club, I am not there to convince them that they're right or that religious people are wrong or anything like that. That's not my role, and I don't even do that when I'm working with students. Now, on my website, in my personal life, I think I do follow the new atheists in a sense. I do want to change policy. I do want people to change their mind. And I don't really hold back in saying how I feel on my website. But again, I can separate those two worlds, because I think the goal for children, for teenagers, should be learning how to ask the right questions, learning how to think critically. And you know what? If they don't end up becoming atheists, I don't really care. But as an adult, you know what? I do want to convince you that if you're religious, you're wrong. I'm not going to hide that. I think you are wrong if you're religious, and I'm going to advocate for that. I'm going to advocate for church-state separation and why we shouldn't be guided by God.
I have noticed that there's been a recent trend in the media, like people writing, and there's been a backlash against these prominent atheists such as Richard Dawkins or Sam Harris. What do you think of this trend?
I think it's just very, very popular. Anytime you write, like, Richard Dawkins is wrong, there's a bunch of people who are going to read that article. So it's a fun article to write. But honestly, every time I've seen them criticize those guys, it always seems to lack serious substance. They're like taking one tweet that Richard Dawkins wrote out of a series of many, and they're like, well, look what he said about Muslims. And it's like, dude, look at the full context. And he's criticizing bad ideas. He's not saying Muslim people are bad or evil. I think people are very prone to just wanting to rip on people. And so when they find any sort of opening, there's no benefit of the doubt given. There's no going to the person and saying, you know, is this what you meant? No, they're just going to say, look what Richard Dawkins said. I'm going to do that all the way. And that's exactly what he meant. I'm going to analyze it, and I'm going to completely take him out of context. I think that's wrong, by the way, when we do that with Christians, too. And that's why, I mean, I do strive to ask myself, when a Christian does something that I find reprehensible, do they actually mean that, or am I taking them out of context? Because if I am taking them out of context, then, you know what, I shouldn't be doing that. That's my fault. But that's why I really like some websites, like Right Wing Watch is one of my favorites, where they literally take clips of their sermons. They take clips of them saying certain things, and they just say, look, here's the clip. We're not taking them out of context. You can see the context right here. See it for yourself. And I don't feel that the same thing happens the other way. No one's saying, here's the full thing that Sam Harris wrote. Let's take all of that and examine it. No, they take, like, here's a sentence. Here's a little phrase he said. And look at what a horrible person he is. And they love to do that to Christopher Hitchens, too, back in the day. So I think it's just fun sport for people to rip on the new atheists when the truth is, yeah, they may be wrong on some things, but by and large, what they've done to advocate for atheism and to get people thinking about religion critically, I think they've done us a huge favor.
I agree. I agree completely. But do you think that some atheists like run the risk of kind of being too uncritical of their heroes? Like, you know,
yeah.
I see this in the comments all the time, and they're just defending uncritically, and you can't really differentiate them from the other side of
people. Oh, absolutely.
Also
critical. Look, we have to be critical of our own people, too. We can't allow ourselves to treat whoever the atheists are like a lot of Christians treat their pastors, which is to say they are unquestionable, that we can't criticize them. And believe me, I have criticized Richard Dawkins when I thought it was warranted. But I'm not against that at all. I think we ought to hold our people up to higher standards. Believe me, any post I write, I guarantee you there are people commenting on my own site telling me how wrong I am. And I appreciate that. I'll read what they have to say, even if I end up not agreeing with it. But I think that's one of the things that serves our community well, which is that, you know what? I know that when I write something, most people are not just going to take it for granted. I know they're not just going to say, well, Hemant said it, so I'm going to believe it. I mean, that'd be crazy. Don't do that. I know they're going to challenge what I say. That's why I try to link to everything I write. I try to provide justification for any ideas I have. And you know what? One thing I do appreciate about what me and some of my contributors do on the site is if we print something that turns out to be wrong, and sometimes when you link to other articles, they turn out to be wrong, we follow up on that. We print the correction and we say, look, we were wrong about this. Here's what happened. And we'll do our best not to do it again.
And I noticed that you have a very tempered, very nuanced kind of new atheism. But one new author or personality in the scene, Peter Boghossian, who I'm interviewing next, actually, like,
good
he advocates kind of becoming a preacher, you know, to bring the gospel of atheism to everyone. Like, to take people wearing crosses as, you know, as a target that you're supposed to hit. And to actively seek out these opportunities.
That's right. Falls into that second camp of people who see religion and want people not to be religious. And I think that's I think he has an uphill battle. He has to fight a lot harder. And I don't know that it's very realistic. And maybe you can ask him about that. I wonder how realistic his approach could actually be. Because I don't know that you can always just say the right things, have those conversations, that people are going to change their mind. Now, I will be honest with you, I changed my mind because I heard people making arguments against religion. And I think most atheists I know will tell you the same thing. They weren't raised atheists. They became an atheist because they read about it, they heard someone arguing against their faith, and they realized after a while, oh, you have a point. And I think that's what Peter's trying to do. He's trying to get people to have those conversations. And you know what? Great. I'm not against him for doing that at all. I don't know that it's the most effective approach to get people on our side when it comes to the issues that matter. I think playing with the whether God exists, it's an important goal, but it's more of a party game. I think it's a game. It's, again, I don't know that I care if people believe in God or not, as long as they agree with me on certain values, certain issues. And I think it is more important that I focus on that thing, whereas I think Peter would tell you, no, let's just cut off the head of the beast. Let's try to convince them God doesn't exist, and the rest of the chips will just fall into place. And I don't know that it's very realistic.
Yeah, speaking of interesting approaches, like, you took one yourself several years back when you wrote this book.
Yes.
You actually signed it for us. I don't know if you remember. So
yes.
That's very cool. Thank you for that. Like, that was 6 years ago. What experience out of all of that is still salient or relevant to you today?
Yeah, well, when I wrote that book, I had never really gone to a lot of Christian churches in my life. I wasn't raised Christian. And so I think the big thing that happened when I wrote that book and when I visited, I think, like 30-some churches, I used to think Christianity, like the spectrum of what Christians believed in, was like that big. And when I went to all these places, I realized it was way bigger. Like, I met liberal Christians. I met Christians here who think those Christians are crazy and vice versa. I met, like, Democrat Christians. I didn't realize there was such a huge spectrum of belief. And that really opened my mind. Like, when you visit some of these churches that do have female pastors, and they welcome gay couples, and they support their right to marry, like, that, you never hear about those churches. You feel like you never hear about those churches in the media. So it's kind of shocking to find out how many Christians probably are closer to me in my beliefs than they are to a lot of, say, evangelical Christians.
Yeah, a lot of people are actually surprised when they learn that one of our most active members is an Episcopalian Christian. And
Doesn't surprise me one bit, especially when you're in a very conservative place, that you would have someone joining your group. In fact, when I started my group in high school, we had a couple religious people coming from a local religious college who would come to our meetings. And I asked them one day, like, why are you guys here? Like, it's nice. I like being challenged, but why are you guys here? They said, we don't get to have this sort of conversation and debate at our own school because everyone just agrees with Jesus and everyone just agrees with Christianity. We like being challenged. And I would argue they were probably closer to where we were arguing about these things and debating it. And if they thought we were wrong, cool, they would have a conversation about that. But I think there are a lot of Christians out there who don't like the Christian subculture, and they oppose it. And it's fun to read their blogs nowadays. It's fun to follow their Twitter feeds.
One prominent Christian who doesn't seem to like the subculture is Pope Francis himself. So he's been doing a heck of a job with the rebranding thing. And what do you think of him? Is it a rebranding thing? Is it superficial change? Or do you think that real change is actually coming to the Catholic Church very soon?
No, I don't. I think we happen to stumble upon a guy who realizes he has so much power and he's going to use it to do whatever he can to show off the type of Christianity that he wants to spread. And good for him for doing that. Now, I will say his beliefs are really no different than that of the other popes. He's just way better at presenting himself to the public. You know, he's way more eloquent. He really does do a nice job with the photo ops, helping the poor and washing their feet and all that. But I think the thing about the Pope that is so compelling is that here's a guy who's trying to preach Catholicism in the way that he knows best. And the thing that's probably holding him back the most are the rules of the Catholic Church. You know, the church hierarchy is the reason that, you know, people don't like the Catholic Church. The sex abuse scandals, the way they treat women and gay people. Here you have a Pope who's like, who cares about that stuff? Those are people. Treat them as humans and love them. And then you have a church hierarchy that says, no, we can't do that. We got to oppose what they do. We got to make sure they don't get into our ranks. And so, you know what? If he can provide a change within the church culture, it'll be better for society. But it's very interesting to see how every time the Pope says something, you feel like the church almost has to tone it down. It's like, well, he said that, but he didn't really mean that. Let us correct him.
Yeah.
So
like you expect Lombardi, like, a few days after to clarify what he actually said.
Yeah, exactly.
I read a recent interview of yours where you said that atheists definitely give less in terms of charity than believers because believers have that structure for giving.
Right.
And now, after working with Foundation Beyond Belief, do you think that this is still the case or has progress happened in that regard?
Well, I'd say two things about that. First is there is a study that just came out. I think it's posting on my site soon. That says atheists, actually, if you look at how much money religious people give to charity, it is higher. But a lot of that high number is them giving to religious charities. Like, they're giving to their churches. They're giving to religious organizations, and should you really count that? When it comes to secular charities that just help people for the sake of helping people, we give the same amount. But I would say that the one thing I learned from working with Foundation Beyond Belief is that when you give atheists a vessel to give, a way to give and help other people, they will take advantage of it. And that was the one thing that religious people had that we didn't. They knew that they could always give through their church. And atheists, you know, we might be able to text the Red Cross on our phones, or we may be able to give through a website, But the Foundation Beyond Belief gives them an opportunity to give to a variety of places, and they've been doing it. Like, in a couple of years, we have raised more than $1 million for different charities. And just most recently, I mean, we've raised the Philippines typhoon. Atheists are quick to give. All they needed was a way to do it.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that last part again? I think broke up a bit.
Sure.
Last sentence, yeah.
I think people really want to give. I think atheists want to give to charity. The only thing that was missing was a good way to do it. And the Foundation Beyond Belief is one of several now ways for them to give. And they're taking advantage of it, which is great.
I think, yeah, you certainly have proven yourselves there. The Foundation Beyond Belief, last time I checked, has already raised $61,000, which is like 2.62 million pesos for the Yolanda Relief effort. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you to everyone who donated.
To the Foundation Beyond Belief or to the Red Cross or to whatever charity. The important thing is that you give. And there are structures for that. There's PayPal here in our country. You could actually just send a text message and you've already donated. Very easy.
Right.
You've also brought to attention in your site like ways of giving such as donating rosaries and Bibles and prayers. On the balance of things, do you think that such efforts are ultimately positive? Or do you think that they shouldn't be bothered with in the first place?
You know, there are a lot of Christian groups that will say, we want to help people who are suffering, so we're going to send them rosaries and Bibles and food and shelter and volunteers. It's like, that's all well and good, but seriously, they don't need the rosaries. They don't need Bibles. They need the other stuff. It's like, it gets really worse when all they're sending are Bibles and rosaries. It's like, just cut out the middleman. Even the Pope said at some point, like on Twitter, send people your prayers and concrete help. Like, it's not enough just to pray. That's not going to do anything. You actually have to help them. And for once, we should listen to the Pope. Like, you can pray all you want. I don't care if you pray or not. I'm just saying, it's not helping. If you really want it to help, send money, donate, send some food, whatever it takes.
And of course, that being said, I don't doubt that some of the people there did appreciate the rosaries, did appreciate the Bibles and the prayers.
Yeah.
Not all of them, certainly, but some of them at least. And it's times like these, like tragedies and calamities, where people cling tighter to religion more than any other time. Do you think that we as non-believers or skeptics have to be more sensitive and nuanced in the way that we speak about these issues? Like, could you go, is there a line that you're not supposed to cross? Because it's a tough question, because people are always suffering in different ways every single day, tragedy or not. What for you is that line?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure what the question was there.
Yeah, like, should we be more sensitive about speaking of atheism and of prayers not working in times like these when some people kind of need something to hang on to?
You know what? We can be sensitive about it. I mean, realize that religion does give people comfort. And I think there is an art to how you speak about religion. I don't think it does us any favors by saying religion is stupid. Like, who are you trying to convince? It's not going to convince religious people to listen to you. I think there is a way to say, look, I know where you're coming from, and I know you're a good person and you want to help other people, but if you really want to help them, look, your rosaries aren't going to, you know, bring back their shelter. It's not going to feed them. I think you can make a logical argument for why you got to actually help them. And you know what? If they want to pray on the downtime, fine, that's a separate argument we could have about whether that does anything. But I think especially in times of crisis, you want as much help as you can get. And if religious people want to do religious things, in addition to actually helping, let's just get them actually helping, you know? I don't feel a need to just begrudge them the fact that they're wasting their time. But let's be honest. I don't think we should hide the fact that, look, there are ways to actually help people.
Yeah. And of course, people cling to religion, sometimes so hard that when they leave religion, they still look for this structure. And
yeah.
this kind of structure in community is provided in part by atheist churches. What do you think of this other trend?
I think it's awesome. I think it's a good thing. It's not necessarily something that everyone's going to like. You know what? I don't know that it's for me either. I don't know that I like to sing, and I don't need to go be a part of a community every week. But I will say there are a lot of people who attended church who miss that aspect of religion. They miss the idea of gathering with their friends every week and singing some songs and hearing an inspirational sermon. And you don't need religion to do any of that stuff. And so for them, having this sort of Sunday assembly, atheist church, quote unquote, that's a great way to transition into their atheism. And I don't understand why people have such an opposite, they're just so opposed to it. And I don't think they understand what it really is. They just say it's like, oh, it's an atheist church. Like, it's a personality cult. No, it's not. You haven't actually been to any of these meetings. It's not like that at all. And I think if they actually went there and saw what it was all about, they would understand that. I don't care if they're for it or against it. I think it's just another way to reach out to religious people. As one of the guys who created that particular service said to me, you know, if you're walking and your shoe has a rock in it, what do? You don't throw away the whole shoe. You just throw out the rock. And I think that's a fair analogy. You can like everything that churches do because they do a lot of good stuff. And you could just toss out the religious aspect and church would actually be an awesome place. You know? And so why not take the good aspects of church and just remodel it to fit atheists? And I don't know that it's even for me, but I know that I like that it's out there.
I agree. And speaking of communities, what can you say about the state of the atheist community in the U.S.? I mean, they say that, you know, bringing atheists together is kind of like herding cats or something like that.
Right.
What can you say about the atheist community in the U.S. and as you see it around the world?
I think it's online, it's growing, and it's growing into a lot of smaller groups, whether they are local in-person groups, whether they're online communities. I think if you went back like 10 years ago, there were a couple prominent atheist groups and a couple websites where you could really get information that you wanted. And now there are groups everywhere. And it's not like there's one or two atheists that, you know, it's not like Richard Dawkins says something and everyone just agrees with it. It's not a personality cult. There are so many different groups meeting. There's so many people doing different things. You're starting to see people focus on how to raise children as atheists, there are atheist dating sites online. There are like all these different variants of how to express your atheism. So in that sense, I love it. I love that there are ways to talk about religion. And you know what? If something doesn't work for you, there might be a different community that does work for you, whether it's, you know, Reddit or, you know, blogs or podcasts or YouTube. There are ways to express yourself and ways to hear things, ideas that you might not otherwise be exposed to. It doesn't mean we're not unified. I think when there are issues that we need to be concerned about, we can come together about them. But by and large, you don't need to be part of this huge community to express your atheism. And I think that might have been the case in the past. But now, you can do whatever you want. You can listen to whoever you want and still kind of get your fix.
Yeah. Your online community is particularly active and, you know, it's still growing, I think. Like, how did you grow your community, your online community, to be that way? And how do you deal with the unique challenges, such as online trolls?
Yeah.
Like, what advice can you give us?
Well, I think I really like my commenters and I like the things we post. I mean, I think I set the tone at the very top by how I post about certain things. I'm not a very angry person in general when it comes to religion, and so I don't really get too worked up over many of the things I post, even if I'm really upset about it. And I think I take a fair tone. I'm not trying to mock people just for the sake of mocking them. You know, I know there are a lot of good Christians out there. I highlight when good Christians are doing good things. And so it starts there. And so I actually don't have that many trolls. I do very little moderation on the website.
Wow.
Unless I really absolutely need to. It kind of just takes care of itself. The people who read the site are very good about flagging bad comments. The Facebook users do the same thing. So I can focus on writing and telling stories and sharing stories, and I don't have to worry about what sort of tone I'm setting, because I think it works out. I'm not that angry. I'm not that much of a jerk. And so the commenters kind of follow suit. And you know what? If they don't like my approach, again, that's the beauty of the online community. There's probably someone else who does meet your tone, and you can go read them.
We get a lot of trolls, especially when it comes to issues like the reproductive health law or same-sex marriage or divorce. We get a lot of trolls there. But recently, like one of the organizations that you've worked with, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, made a big stride in the fight for secularism. Can you tell us a bit about the implications of what happened?
Yeah, which particular case are you talking about?
The taxation.
So pastors currently, they can have a tax write-off. They can get part of their salary specifically earmarked for their housing, and they don't get taxed on that money. And that's kind of like, I mean, I get a salary too, but I don't get a special bonus, like tax exemption for my mortgage. So if you're religious, you get this special benefit. And for years, the Freedom From Religion Foundation has been saying that's not fair. It's giving a special privilege to religious people. And in fact, the Freedom From Religion Foundation's board said, you know what, we'll give you guys, we'll earmark part of your salary and say, you can have a tax exemption, and let's see if the government allows you to take it. And when they said, hey, give us our tax exemption, because we're religious or non-religious leaders, the government said, all right, fine, we'll play your game. You can have a tax exemption because you are a, quote, minister of the gospel. And they said, no, this is ridiculous. You're missing the point here. You should not be giving a special bonus to people who are ministers of the gospel. And finally, a judge said, you're right. Pastors should not be getting the special bonus that is not available to people who are not pastors. Now, we'll see what happens in the long run. For all we know, the government's going to support the churches on this issue. And even if it goes to an appeals court and the Supreme Court, you know, the religious people may have a lot of people on their side. But on principle alone, I think FFRF is right here. They're calling out a fair point, which is that religious people get a bonus that is not given to other people, and they don't deserve that. They should be able to get the same treatment as anyone else does.
Yeah, they fight for this kind of bonus as if it were a right.
Now, right.
What a right, speaking of rights, I think that the right to marriage of same-sex couples, you know, the LGBT community, who are incidentally celebrating Pride March, the Pride Month, like December, and they're having their Pride March. Like, what message of support can you give the LGBT community, and in particular, those people who are having it doubly hard because they have to come out not only as an LGBT individual, but as a gay or lesbian or bisexual, transgender LGBT individual, atheist individual?
I mean, I'm straight, so I can't pretend to know what it's like to be in their shoes. But I would say stay strong. There's a lot of people who are on your side. And I think this is why it's so important that because there are people out there who cannot come out for whatever reason, that's why we need people who are safe to come out. I said it about atheists and I'll say it again about LGBT issues. If you're an ally or if you are gay or lesbian and you can come out of the closet, you should, because that's the only way it's going to change. Even in America, we have Republican senators who say they support equal rights for gay people, and the justification they always give is that they have a gay person in their family. As soon as they know someone personally, it changes their mind, or at least publicly, it changes their mind on this issue. So that's what we need to do. We need to get more people to come out and say, I am gay, or I support gay people, and I'm going to fight for that person's rights, even if I don't know them, even if I have nothing to do with them. So, you know, if you are in the closet and you can't come out, stay strong, because it will get better. It does get better. It's gotten better. And it just may take a little more time, but we'll get there.
Speaking about LGBT and marriage equality, you recently got married yourself, so congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. How did you do that as a non-believer? Like, what did you use to replace all of those religious rituals in your own ceremony?
That's interesting. I actually wrote a post just the other day about the vows we said, the script we used for a thing, and it'll go up on my site in a day or two. But basically, I got a friend of mine, the guy who actually runs the Secular Student Alliance, who I've known for a long time, he was the officiant for my wedding. And he sent over a script that was non-religious, very beautiful though, and said, how would you like to say this stuff? And we kind of looked at his script and said, we would like to change the following things. We would like our friends to read from a few selections. And we basically, with his help, constructed a script that did not have God in it, but had a lot of the elements you might see in a traditional wedding. And to be honest, I don't even think anyone noticed. I think they were just like, oh, that was a really cute ceremony. We like what you said. We like the readings. And I don't think, I mean, no one said to me, like, well, that was great, but God was missing. No one said that. Even my religious relatives didn't say that.
That's great. Of course, it's Thanksgiving. What does an atheist today have to be thankful for in particular?
Well, I think the biggest thing is we have to, while a lot of people might be looking up to give thanks, we just got to look around us. Thank your family, thank your friends, thank your colleagues, the people who made the food, who harvested the food, the people who make your life better on a regular basis. There are so many of them. Give thanks to them because they're the people who make your life worth living. I just don't understand why people have to look up to give thanks, you know, at Thanksgiving dinner when everyone you should be thanking is probably sitting around you.
Yeah, thank you so much for all of your, you know, all of your insights, for your time. Lastly, are there any projects you'd like to plug or any calls to action you'd like to make?
You know what? I work with the Foundation Beyond Belief, and I think it's a wonderful organization. If you're looking to help out people, help out good charities and to give to good charities as a group of atheists, check out foundationbeyondbelief.org. And I always love the work the Secular Student Alliance does. So check secularstudents.org. Good groups, they're fighting for students, they're fighting to help other people who are less fortunate. And any group you can support. And by the way, your group as well, with the Filipino Freethinkers, it's always great to see a strong group, especially in a country that is so overrun by religious people. It's nice to have that rational voice of opposition. So thank you for all you do.
Thank you so much, and I hope that we could repeat or have another conversation next time. And
I would enjoy that. I would enjoy that. Thank you so much, Red.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.